Welcome to the Anubis Podcast. Anubis is a network for nerds that publishes headline news about technology, entertainment, gaming, and other nerdy topics. Interviews, reviews, editorials, fanfiction, and more. I'm your host for this week, Eric Sapphire for Anubis, and I'm joined this week again by Tobias.
Hello.
He's also a fellow staff writer.
Yep.
And Andrea, who's also a staff writer.
Hi, guys.
And we're just going to be covering just two main topics because they each have a lot to talk about. First, we're going to start with E3 2016. A lot's been going on this week. And then the second one will be on Game of Thrones as the second to last episode comes out tonight. We'll just get right into it. So at E3, we've seen a lot of cool reveals, not just in games, but also in technology. A lot of VR stuff, a lot of new console reveals. I guess, you know, what excited us and what kind of disappointed us about E3. And, where do we see things going from here? Tobias, why don't you go ahead and start?
I think this E3 has been, the most interesting E3 for me. For like several years, because there's been so many new cool announcements and all this with the VR finally getting good.
I agree. VR has come a long way since like Kinect and stuff.
But there was also some disappointments, like. Do you know Scalebound?
Oh, sorry, is it Scalebound?
Yeah, the one exclusive for Microsoft.
Right, yeah.
I think it's an exclusive, at least.
I don't know too much about it. I kind of just, I know it by name, and I think I've seen some footage of it. Oh, what was bad about it?
It's made by Platinum Games, the ones that did Metal Gear Rising. And I think they did the Bayonetta as well. And the other, the new Transformers game, action game.
The Transformers, was it the Battle of Cybertron, something like that?
I don't know the name of it, but it's one of those action spectacle combo game, Devil May Cry.
Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
So, sorry, keep going.
They made the Scalebound, and what they showed last year was this really energy-packed cinematic, and with really cool music and stuff like that. And now they showed the gameplay, and it's this slow Monster Hunter type of game, and it's not what they are known for, and it wasn't what I expected at all.
Nice. What did you think in terms of Sony versus Microsoft? Who do you think sort of one up each other, or kind of won?
Definitely Sony.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Now I can't remember the games from Sony had a lot to show.
Yeah, God of War 4.
God of War 4, that was a very interesting reveal, because it's not have you played any of the God of War games?
It was a very short time for a summer. I had a PS3, and I only bought it because, you know, at that point it was really cheap to buy the older ones, and I had money now, so I went and bought it, and I started playing a bunch of exclusive games, and I had God of War 3. I didn't beat it. I thought it was cool for what it was, action adventure stuff. It reminded me a lot of sort of Ninja Gaiden with more platforming stuff, and I thought it was pretty cool, but yeah.
This new, it's not at all like the ones before. because
you're right about that. It's very like
toned
more
down,
personal. Even the camera space is different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Gears of War almost.
Mm-hmm.
Other things was like Crash Bandicoot. That was a pretty cool announcement because I haven't heard anything about a new Crash at all.
I heard, they were bringing the original Crash into PS4 and sort of making a new one as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
What did you say?
Sorry, they announced that they're like re-releasing a sort of like remastered of the old Crash games. Are they making a new one as well?
Yeah, they're making a new one. At least, okay. Or maybe it is just a remastering.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never really grew up with Sony consoles. I grew up with Nintendo, and then when the original Xbox came out, that's when I sort of started converting to more towards Microsoft Xbox products. I never grew up with these classic Sony games. I didn't grow up with Final Fantasy, that, or something like Spyro, or Ratchet and Clank. But yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay, then we're like two different sides because I was the PlayStation kid.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
I traded my Nintendo 64 for a PS1 when I was like 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo's always been the sort of weaker side to me. Yes, meaning their technology is consistently behind the rest of them. Their games, they don't have good games. They don't have good third-party games. They only have good first-party games. Those only come out a couple of times a year. And I think it was expressed more so in these recent console generations. We had the Xbox One and the PS4, and then Nintendo released the Wii U, which is just a beefed-up kind of version of the Wii U, adding a little gamepad and stuff. But technology-wise, that's only on par with the last generation, the 360 and PS3. So it came to a point where I don't think most people took Nintendo very seriously. But yeah. So did you happen to see any of Nintendo's presentations?
Oh, that's the only one I haven't watched yet.
Right. I haven't really watched much of that one either. I saw the new Zelda. Now that looks pretty cool. The art style, it kind of reminds me a lot of Wind Waker, but yeah. It still has that kind of mature dark theme too. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I haven't played a lot of Zelda games. The one I play the most is like Ocarina of Time on 3DS. Other than that, I haven't played any Zelda.
Ocarina of Time, one of the pioneers in action-adventure games. So, I think I heard Nintendo has a new console. Nintendo's like NX or something like that.
Yeah, the NX. I think it's supposed to release next year or at Christmas, maybe.
Okay. I mean, let's hope it's actually on par with the rest of the competition. At this point, I don't think they can keep doing that. What did you like about the Microsoft?
The Sony and Microsoft is also releasing new stuff. Like maybe not in exactly the same way, but you know the PlayStation Neo, I think they're calling it.
Yeah.
Like updated hardware and stuff like that.
That wasn't at E3 though. From what I recall, they decided not to make a big announcement at E3, but they confirmed it like months before.
I was surprised that they didn't talk anything about that.
Because to me, that was what Microsoft had over Sony. Because this time around, they're kind of pushing. They're being more offensive now. Because when they first released Xbox One and PlayStation, PlayStation 4 at E3, that was a marketing disaster for Microsoft. I've never seen Microsoft fail that horribly ever. And Sony took full advantage of it. They were like, their marketing was the direct punch in the face to Microsoft and stuff. They've changed everything since then, and they have to be very defensive. And to this day, PS4s outsell the shit out of Xbox Ones. unfortunately for them. So this time around, they're becoming more offensive. They're telling you, oh, look, this is the new sexy-looking Xbox S, the slim version, where it looks amazing. It's white. You know, it's all white. You know, the mechanics are a lot easier to deal with. And then next year will be Project Scorpio, which I'm sure you've heard of, which is supposed to be the competition to PS4 Neos, yeah. And you know, when they're talking about the specs, it impressed the hell out of me. This is, I mean, PC gaming is always going to be ahead of console gaming. That's just a given. But when you look at what Scorpio and Neo are trying to do, is have the 4K gaming on consoles and stuff, the amount of specs they're cramming in there is pretty impressive. Something like 8 teraflops or something ridiculous like that. Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, my current PC cannot do that. My current PC, this is like, I built this for $630 and it cannot run 4K and stuff. That's pretty impressive that they're going to go that route. And then there's a question of price. You know, no one knows how expensive that's going to be in 2017. But yeah, we'll see. It's got me pretty excited though. I just have to question the marketing, because you're talking about releasing the Xbox One S in August, and then only a year from now is the Scorpio. So you're thinking to yourself, why should I bother upgrading at that point? Yeah.
Do you remember if they talked anything about VR, Microsoft?
Oh, yeah. So that's what I believe, yeah. Neo and Scorpio will be not only 4K, for, you know, have 4K resolution and stuff for their gaming and stuff. And it's supposed to be VR adaptable. So the Oculus Rift, etc. We already know the PlayStation 4 has some VR stuff. And it's trying to take that to the next level. So having more virtual reality things embedded into your gaming and stuff. Have you seen the other games that are going to support VR? Fallout 4 will now have virtual reality. And then there's a new Batman Arkham game that's going to have VR. But they don't have any footage of it, just a teaser trailer. But I read an article about having the hands-on with the Arkham VR. And it's just like a first-person kind of detective game. It doesn't sound very exciting to me, because that's not how I envision playing Batman games. But it just sounds like a glorified mystery game to me. But playing Fallout 4 in VR, that could really change stuff around.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I saw... Sorry, keep going.
And it was Doom as well, right?
Yeah.
That would be Doom. Pretty sick.
Yeah. I haven't bought... I did not buy the new Doom yet. I did play the beta multiplayer. And not the beta, but, you know, they released a multiplayer kind of early, and you can play on Steam. That's what I did. Multiplayer is terrible. The multiplayer is horrendous. It's like a terrible Call of Duty knockoff. But the single player looks cool, because it's really brutal and stuff. And I remember playing some Doom 3 back in my day. Speaking of other VR games, there were some kind of smaller, just VR-only games they were showing off. Did you see that there's a game where you can play, it's various different sports games. So you can throw a disc, and it's actually the first actual co-op VR game, I think. So you're playing against other people or with people, and you throw a ball, and you have to actually move your hands to catch it. And they'll bounce off stuff. That's pretty cool, yeah.
I don't remember seeing anything of that. But it reminded me of this... I don't remember either which ones that showed it, but it was this Star Trek game.
Really?
With VR, when you're in the Enterprise and everyone taking orders and just running the ship together.
Nice. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. The VR, beyond this gaming, I've been seeing videos of how VR will be used in other fields, right? It's the medical field, engineering architecture, right? You can just have, HoloLens, right? For instance, HoloLens is kind of a form of that. Microsoft HoloLens, it's an augmented reality vision. So you put on the glasses or whatever, and you can see the outline of just different objects in a 3D space in wherever you are. So you can just show it to anyone, this is how you fix a pipe or something like that. And I saw a recent video on showing the entire human anatomy, and you can pull out different organs and look at a 3D space, and it's supposed to help med students really get into that. Yeah, I thought that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. I think VR will be much, much bigger than just games. It will be the future, like the internet. Like people thought that was just another thing that will pass by, but I think VR will be really huge.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Well, I'm usually skeptical with kind of gimmicky technology trends. I mean, we tried so hard for decades to make sort of 3D and VR stuff come to life, and for a while to me it was just kind of just like something that's only cool in theory, because we've had, I mean, VR pioneering has gone as far a long ass time ago. I remember I was at a friend's place and he had I forget the name of this, but it's made by Nintendo, where it has a goggle similar to Oculus Rift. You just put your eyes up to it and then you play a game, but it's not like anything special. It's almost like a more rounder shape of the resolution you're playing in.
And it was a little bit weird.
Sorry, what? Yeah, yeah.
The virtual.
I believe that's... Yeah.
Yeah.
The virtual, yeah. And it's never really, like, kind of gotten anywhere. And then when they first released Kinect, do you remember when they first released that in E3 or announced it in E3?
Yeah, I remember that.
God, what a... next to the Xbox One's marketing, that was pretty terrible, because they spent so much time building all this hype, all the money they spent on marketing, and it's just like, oh my god, look at Project Natal. You can, you can like talk to this, you know, this AI boy and stuff, and you can play little games where you just kind of flail your arms around the living room, and just wasn't anything about it was that great. And the only reason why I have a Kinect is because it came with my Xbox One. Now they don't even sell it with it now, because they realize people don't care about it, and they make more money by selling it and cutting the price on that. And the newer models now, Xbox One S and the Scorpio, they aren't even Kinect adaptable unless you have an adapter, which actually will come with it. But it's just kind of showing that they don't really care for it anymore, because now we have a new kind of trend. Virtual reality that actually works better and people give a shit about. Like, Kinect was just all over the place. I only use it because I can use voice commands and be like, oh, Xbox, turn on. Xbox, go home. Go to my movie or something like that, right?
Oh, but, so that actually works now?
Oh, yeah. No, it works. It's inconsistent, but for the most part, it works. Sometimes you'll just be talking to a friend and then it'll just go to your movies. I'm like, I didn't even say the word movie. Sometimes I'll do that, but it's cool. The motion sensors are just kind of all over the place. If you're not in a big kind of spacious living room, it's pointless. And I tried using you can use your hand motion to change the screen. That was like stupid as hell. I'm never doing that again. There's no reason why I should just be able to use my controller, so I'll just use my controller. But yeah, so Kinect was like a kind of a failed sort of attempt at doing VR, and now this is the actual VR. And because it makes more sense now, because now the point of VR is to make sure that you're not just, it's not some gimmick where you just kind of move around and then the game responds. Now they put it to your eye, your actual eyes, and your brain and your senses are now in that, are mixed with the game itself. That's how VR should be, and it makes a lot more sense that way. That's cool.
VR with Kinect, if it would work, that would be pretty cool. I think it's the Vive, HTC Vive, that has these two controllers that you can like paint and everything.
Yeah. You can use your hands in the VR. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like Kinect, but it looks like it works better.
Mm-hmm. My only issue being maybe motion sickness. And then maybe if I'm using those controls where I actually use my arms, my only issue is, like, I've seen people already, like, flail around and hit the TV or hit someone else by accident. You don't know where the hell you are because you're completely lost in this game universe. So, yeah, I don't want to, like, run into stuff. The way I would, if I were to use it, I would use it just with my game controller. So I'm not moving anywhere else physically.
Yeah, the good thing with I've seen with the Vive is that you can like set an indicator where how much space you have in your room. So when you go near the edge of the indicator, like
It'll tell you.
You can, right. Yeah.
All right, well, that's smart. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So you don't destroy your whole room.
I keep thinking of that hilarious video when the Nintendo Wii just came out, and this dude's like playing it, and he swings his Wiimote into the screen, it crashes a hole through it. Yeah, I don't want that to happen. That would suck.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Yeah, aside from that, did you see that new Hideo Kojima game announcement?
Yeah, they didn't show much. It was just
a teaser, yeah.
What's his name? Norman.
Norman Reedus, yeah. From Walking Dead, yeah.
Yeah. And he had like black on his hands, and black spots appeared.
Mm-hmm. And he had a baby attached to him, or some shit.
Yeah.
That was the weirdest trailer I've ever seen in games, and I've seen some pretty weird trailers. And I don't even know what this is. I don't know what it's about. It doesn't look like a game to me. It looks like a weird, like psychological thriller film, and that's me being as general as possible. But I don't even know what to think. It's like you see Norman Reedus completely naked and like cuffed, and a baby attached to his stomach through like a vocal cord and shit. And he like holds a baby. And like, is this game about like a guy giving birth? I don't even know what the hell this is. And you see the surgical cuts, like he had a C-section in his body, and then all of a sudden it's gone, just blood everywhere, like you said. And then there's a big ocean and beach line, and then a five figures in the distance floating in the air. And I'm just like, what is this? To me, like, I told you this before in the last podcast, I do like Hideo Kojima. I think he's done a lot of great stuff for video games, Metal Gear Solid series. But I always get this sort of pretentious, artsy fartsy vibe from him. Like, I think he thinks too highly of himself when it comes to what he thinks he's showing on screen from his writing. Like, he makes things unnecessarily convoluted when they don't really have to be. He tries to use symbolism. They don't really mean things, like pseudo-symbolism. Like, when you're playing the introduction of Metal Gear Solid 5 and there's that fucking flaming whale in the sky, I'm like, what is this? Like, it's weird. Some of that just kind of puts me off.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll see.
People think that it feels kind of pretentious and artsy-fartsy and stuff like that, but there's also a lot of humor that he's put into his games as well, so he doesn't take himself 100% seriously. Mm-hmm. Like an artist. He wants to have fun, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's true, I mean, because there are some weird things. As serious as like Metal Gear Solid is as a tone, there are some weird kind of... This is my other kind of complaint. I don't think he knows how to do humor very well. It just kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, you'll see, there's a running gag of the guy always taking a shit, like in Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, at the end, he's a badass. He takes off his mask, and he's a good-looking badass, and he gets married with Meryl. I'm just like, I don't know where that came from. Like, you make this guy like a goofball, clumsy jackass for like 90% of the game, and the very end, now he's a hero. I'm like, that's weird to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of stupid things in the Metal Gear series.
Yeah. But yeah, you have to appreciate what his goals are, like what he's trying to achieve. He kind of breaks kind of gaming conventions, and his stories kind of they explore really mature themes. A lot about war itself. Like, I think every installment of the MGS games are exploring a different facet of war. I mean, MGS4 being private militarization, right? When you give it out to all these different mercenary companies, which we do today, there's a greater fear that we end up giving way too much power to them, and then they're basically an army with no allegiance, and they can start becoming more powerful than countries themselves. And then MGS5 talking about what the costs of war is, the consequences, what you end up losing. So those are definitely things to commend about him. He's definitely a visionary dude. I mean, that much you gotta credit him for. I really wish though that Silent Hills, that last game that he was gonna do with Norman Reedus, had not been canceled, because everyone was super hyped from that. And that demo, PT demo, that fucking blew people's minds. I still watch that. It's great. It's like watching a horror film.
Yeah, it's such a shame that they had to cancel that. or every other game that they were thinking about doing. It was Konami, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They also, like the ending of Metal Gear Solid 5, they had to cut because they were closing down everything.
Yeah, I actually, man, I've had MGS5 for a year, I think, by now. Yeah, definitely at least a year. And I have not actually beaten the game yet. I should probably get around doing that. I only just got to the Africa setting, so I need to get on that.
Yeah, it's a great game, but when you're finished, you just feel like you've been cheated out of an ending, and you just sit there like completely disappointed.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I heard about that too. That same reaction. It's just like story could have been stronger. Yeah. And I mean, I've had that feeling before with plenty of video games. I mean, Assassin's Creed 3 did that to me. I was like, this ending's terrible. I wasted all this time for this terrible ending. Yeah, Mass Effect 3 being a big one on that. Yeah. So when we're talking about, let's see. Yeah, what other games? We got God of War 4, Death Stranding, that weird Hideo Kojima game. Gears of War 4, there's that.
All right, when we're talking about PT, Capcom is releasing a new Resident Evil that looks a lot similar to what PT was, the new Resident Evil.
Yeah, that's true. I remember looking at that, Resident Evil 7. Yeah, it looks like, yeah, it's a... Because the recent Resident Evil games, ever since Resident Evil 4, every single installment has been like a action adventure game where you get a fuck ton of guns and you just fuck people up, monsters up. And the actual thrill of a survival horror is gone. Now it's just an action game. And it was great for Resident Evil 4 because it worked so well. And there was a balance to it. But then things became less about horror when games like Resident Evil 5 came out, Resident Evil Revelations, and then Resident Evil 6 came out, because then it became like way too overblown. So it seems to me now they really want to go back to its roots of a survival horror and what it's originally about. That's what like Resident Evil 1 and 2 really, and 3 really pioneered for the genre itself. It's like, oh, I don't have too much ammo to waste on these monsters. It's a better idea to run away than it is to fight them. Whereas in Resident Evil 4, I kill everything and steal all their goods and shit so I can get more guns. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was Resident Evil 5 and 6 as well. Just action. You beat bosses and, like, these huge spectacles, and there was no horror to it at all.
Yeah. I mean, like, in Resident Evil 6, they even got rid of the tension of standing still. I mean... As weird as a mechanic it is for someone to just stand still only and then shoot, it added attention a lot to Resident Evil 4 because you know these guys are coming closer to you and you can't move and shoot at the same time, so you really have to pick your spot, aim quickly, move again. There's a lot of strategy to it. So, you know, as goofy as that sounds, it's a lot of fun. It adds everything to the mechanics of this game. It makes it work better that way. And there is sort of that element of horror because you don't know if someone's behind you and how close you're getting. There's a risk and reward element. Resident Evil 6, they just completely got rid of it. You can move and shoot. You can do cool combat rolls. You can do kicks. You can do fucking like WWE-style wrestling moves on them. It's like, all right.
Yeah, the essence of what was is gone down. Like, completely.
Mm-hmm. So, Resident Evil 6, 7, and then there's...
The two Revelations games.
Yeah, Revelations games.
They were a bit like trying to implement a bit of horror, I think.
Yeah, they were. Because weren't a lot of those like basically prequels, and they're trying to like, you can play as Jill Valentine and stuff. Yeah. Let's see, what else? God of War 4.
Are you a Star Wars fan?
Yeah, I love Star Wars.
I think it was EA that announced a ton of Star Wars games.
Wait, like new games, new titles?
Yeah, new titles, completely new.
Hold on, let me. Because the only thing I heard was that they had some Battlefront DLC. You can play in Cloud City now, and they actually brought Lando and the actor of Lando to play him.
Yeah, but there was one action adventure game, and there was something more.
Okay, here it is. EA's upcoming Star Wars games. What is this? Damn, I should pay more attention. You know what I really missed when LucasArts was still a studio? I wanted them to release Star Wars 1313, that bounty hunter game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it looked great, and then they got the entire company fell apart.
Yeah, that's a shame. Because it looked pretty, how do you say, it looked original.
Uh-huh, it did. It was a gritty Star Wars game that it didn't need Force powers or Jedis or lightsabers to be cool. It's just going to give you this, because there's so much about Star Wars that is cool, and like, you don't need those elements. It's a completely different side of Star Wars. And I'm looking at this game, the footage right now. This looks pretty damn cool. A lot of speculation around it. I think a lot of it looks like it's based off of the 1313 themes and properties of that. That's pretty cool. Damn.
Yeah, they didn't show little teasers. We're doing this and we're doing that and yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at, yeah. I mean, I'm glad you pointed it out, because there's a lot of things I've been missing out on E3. Oh, of course. Fucking Dishonored 2. That looks amazing. Are you into that?
I played the first game, maybe 4 hours, and then I just got tired of it.
Oh, really? That's a shame. Yeah. I loved Dishonored 1. I thought it was one of, like, the, you know, one of the few really fun, like, first-person action-adventure games really does crazy stuff with it. You know, every level is multiple ways of completing it. You can focus on, you can complete the entire game without killing anyone or just kill a bunch of people. And it has two different endings based on that. The cool thing about the second one is now you can play as the daughter or the girl, the little girl at the end of Dishonored.
It had several endings, right?
Yeah.
And they just
well, the first one only
kind
has
of spoiled.
Two. Yeah. Yeah.
The first game. or one ending at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the ending, apparently, well, the ending of first one will come into play in the second one. So it's like, if you killed a bunch of people, then you're telling Emily Caldwell that this is the way to go, that you kill your enemies while no mercy. And then if you don't kill a bunch of people, or you have a low body count, you're telling you that you're a more passive right way of doing stuff. Yeah.
Oh, like, they're doing that transfer thing?
Mm-hmm. I think so. That's kind of what was being implied in the interview from the developers. Yeah, and it looks cool. I think that this game will be awesome. There's a lot of cool powers and ability to add. You can play as either Corvo, the guy in the first game, or as Emily. You gotta choose one from the beginning, though. And then one of the powers that Emily has is, like, it's called Domino, where you can link multiple people together, and whatever happens to one person, it will happen to the other guy. So you kill them, they die. And they have some pretty creative stuff where these bad guys, the henchmen or the guards, are exterminating people. A firing squad. So the person linked the fate of the person being shot with the guy shooting at them. So they killed themselves. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, there was one power that reminded me of the game The Darkness.
Yeah, The Darkness.
Yeah, the like ending kill, where she turns into a like shadowy beast and just rips a soldier apart.
Yeah, yeah. She's got some pretty rad powers, yeah.
And then
a big reveal that developers said that you can play Dishonored 2 without powers, period. So the outsider, the guy who gives you powers, will come to you, and you get the option of refusing his gift. And if you refuse his gift, you get to play the entire game without powers. And it's supposed to, you know, obviously ridiculously hard. So that's pretty crazy. I might try that out.
Yeah, you can complete the game without killing anyone also as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Why I didn't finish the first one, I think, was because I didn't get into the narrative. Like, the story wasn't, didn't impact me, anything.
Yeah. I like the setting, I like the story a lot. My only issue being that the protagonist didn't talk at all. Now he does, thank God. Now they actually gave him a voice actor, but they did the whole silent protagonist route in Dishonored 1. I thought it was really obnoxious because, you know, I at no point in time from games from playing Zelda or Half-Life have I ever thought that because my character is not talking, that I'm more immersed. Like, that was the idea behind it, that you as a player are in that person, in that protagonist, and you are, you know, interacting with those people yourself. But it doesn't work that way because they're talking to you, and your character doesn't say anything, and it just makes it seem like you're just an awkward mute, just not saying shit to anyone. And yeah, well, I'm glad they actually gave him a voice actor now.
In the first one? Not even in the cinematics or anything?
No, zero. Oh. There was nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't even like Link. At least Link grunts, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, did you see the new Deus Ex game, Deus Ex Mankind Divided?
Yeah. I'm pretty interested in that. I played Human Revolution, right?
Yeah.
I played that a lot. That was a great game. I haven't played the other two before that, but I think it will be. It looks good, the new one.
Mm-hmm. The Human Revolution was like, it had a lot of RPG elements, but it's still, for the most part, a linear action-adventure shooter game. But, you know, just like this honor, you can tackle any of these missions, levels, however way you want to. And the augmented abilities are insane. You know, the whole shooting your blade out and it explodes and stuff, yeah, it's pretty cool. Let's see. They have a new Spider-Man game coming out, but it's only for PS4, which kind of annoys me because I don't have one. And we only saw a teaser of that, but it looks pretty good. Just because they're taking advantage of the technology more. There's more indoor and more interior spaces in the new Spider-Man game.
I didn't see that. It was an exclusive. Is it really?
Oh, you didn't see that? Yeah. It's a PS4 exclusive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Sony owns Spider-Man, but they never, for in terms of game development, that was always up to Treyarch and some other, I think another one, was it actually, no, but yeah, it was a much, and it's always been multi-platform game, but now they changed it, and it's only a PS4 exclusive, and I don't know, we'll see where it goes.
I thought they only had the film rights, but they have the game rights. Exclusively mm-hmm. as well now?
I don't know, actually, because the movie rights are a little bit different, but they did, because a lot of the older Spider-Man games were based on the movies anyways, so maybe that's why, yeah. And I didn't decide to stop out sort of in the Treyarch. Now Insomniac is making it, and Insomniac has made what games again? They're a pretty big name, guys. Insomniac. Here we are. Oh, the Ratchet and Clank series. That's what they're responsible for. So, that's pretty cool. And Sunset Overdrive. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
And the Resistance series. Okay. I remember playing a Resistance game. I thought they were kind of overrated. They didn't play very well to me. But Yeah, that's cool. Spider-Man.
No, it was the second one. I think I played a lot.
Resistance 2. Yeah.
Yeah, the multiplayer was kind of fun because you could have a lot of
40
players.
Right?
Yeah.
I had Resistance 2 and 3 in the campaign, and the controls kind of threw me off. I thought they had a cool ideas, like the weapons being used were cool. But to me, I feel like, I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I liked Halo games more. I feel like it was a tighter controls from that one.
Yeah, the Halo games.
But yeah.
Like 2 and 3 are some my two, or maybe not my two favorite games, but among the favorite games of mine.
Yeah, 2 is my favorite, for sure.
Yeah.
Halo 2 had the perfect balance of a great lengthy campaign, a lot of replayability into that one too, and multiplayer was insane, dual wielding was awesome, and I thought none of the future titles really lived up to that, if you ask me, but still a lot of fun.
Halo Reach, Skull Challengers in this third one.
Yeah,
I played a lot of that.
I had more fun playing with the replay theater in Halo 3. Just constantly looking through my old game footage and taking recording it and taking screenshots and looking at different angles. That was a lot of fun to do. That was a great addition. Yeah.
That was like where Machinima started getting big with all the Halo 3 Machinimas.
Yeah. Machinima really sort of took off when Rooster Teeth did Red vs. Blue and Halo 1, and then when Halo 2 came out more so, and Halo 3 gave everyone the ability now to film it a lot easier now because of the theater mode. Yeah, definitely. That's when I started actually following Machinima.com and stuff.
Yeah, that was like 2008, I think, around that time.
Yeah. I was like in middle school just playing a fuck ton of Halo 3.
Yeah.
No. High school, man. Fresh high school. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Just not sleeping at all and just playing Halo 3 with friends.
Yeah, not care about anything in the world, just play games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of ways I still do that now, but not for long when I start going back to school. Let's see, what else? Hold on. I feel like I actually need to pull the fucking list here. E3.
The new Battlefield.
Battlefield 1. The thing about Battlefield games, and actually just most of these military shooter games, is that they're play, but I suck at them online. Like, everyone's better than me, and I just get frustrated. I just kind of stop playing. But it is a cool concept that they're not doing the really tired, like, oh, this is set in the future, which is what Call of Duty's been doing for a long time. I got tired of that. But, yeah, doing a World War One, which no one does at all. No one does World War One games. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the only, like, World War One game I can think of is Valiant Hearts. Do you know that game? I think it's an indie game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like an adventure point-and-click game.
Mm-hmm. Adventure point... Yeah, those are... You're talking about the Batman one, right?
No, a World War One game.
Oh, okay, World War One. Okay, right.
That's the only one I can think of that's in that setting.
In terms of a World War One game, there was an independently made game, I think it's on Steam, actually, where it's like a realistic World War One game focusing a lot on trench warfare. Yeah, I forgot what it's called, but it's on there. But this is the first time I've really seen a major company kind of go that route. But looking at it, it looks like it plays exactly like you'd play a normal Battlefield game. Just kind of running around, shooting people, some cool vehicles here and there.
It's speeded up World War One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like it's a World War One skin on a Battlefield game, because when I think of World War One, battles, like, a lot of trench warfare, a lot of trying to gain ground inch by inch by running across these open fields and getting mowed down by bad guys, And I think for the longest time, that's why it was so hard to adapt that to a game, because it just it would seem really boring to a player. All you're doing is just moving just forward, praying that you don't get sniped in the skull, or getting machine gun, or getting mustard gassed, and that sort of stuff. And when I'm looking at the footage in the Battlefield 1, it's just kind of running around in towns and like little at cities and then blowing shit up. And like this doesn't look that much different from Battlefield 4 or 3 or 2, whatever, what have you. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I think that their last game was stupid. Battlefield Hardline. You ever play that?
No, I haven't played that, but I've seen a lot of footage from it.
Yeah, same. The single player, they added a single player narrative to it and didn't. It was like a, basically, it played out like a shitty cop drama, like a very, very cliched cop drama. And then it's just dumb because you cannot mix these super over the top elements of Battlefield with a police setting, like a crime setting, because yeah, you can arrest people or something like that and you get more points, but you're seeing guys pull out RPGs and shit. I'm just like, well, you know, what scenario does that happen in real life when you're cops are fighting against common criminals? No one has a fucking rocket launcher or something like that. Yeah, it was like a novel idea, but I feel like it just should have stayed on the drawing board. Okay, so let's talk about kind of our complaints about E3. Mine being, I think these trends of remasters are getting kind of old to me. And maybe it's more so because I'm a PC gamer now, but I think when people say they're releasing a remastered edition of a game, it's just sort of shit that it only caters towards console players because they get to play the game they used to enjoy on the previous generation now, on the current one, which is cool. But when you're a PC gamer and someone tells you, oh, hey, man, they're releasing a new Batman Arkham series HD remastered, I'm like, that doesn't mean anything to me because I already have it on the computer and the settings are already really good. And when you get a game like Skyrim, they recently said that Skyrim would have a remastered edition. PC gamers already have that because they've had better settings already, and then they already had the modding community release mods where they really bring out the graphic fidelity of those games, of this game in particular. So I don't know. Getting excited about a remaster doesn't really get me excited anymore unless it was a game that was an exclusive or a game that came out like on like a really old one. Like when they said they remastered Halo 2 for the Halo Master Chief Collection, that was cool. It looks great because that's a really, really old game and they completely redid the engine. So that's like a huge improvement and you can't get on anything else. So yeah, I don't know. Well, what about you? What are your complaints?
I don't know. I don't have a lot of complaints, really. The one thing I talked about before, the scale bound thing, and yeah, I don't know if anything really disappointed me.
Yeah, I could see that. It just for me, I just feel like we needed more newer titles, I guess, you know, instead of just sequels, more sequels, like a Gears of War 4, a God of War 4, that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
That being said, Mafia 3 looks awesome.
Yeah, it does.
I might get that.
And it's like, I'll go on.
So, I mean, for starters, you're playing in a really unique setting, like 1960s Louisiana. And then your character is a half, like, I think he's half black, I'm not sure, but he's definitely, like, he's an African-American, and it's cool because this game is really tackling kind of issues of race, for once, and then making a character like, who's really cool at the same time.
Yeah, I haven't played any of them. I think I played, like, the second one a bit, but I didn't feel any from that. It was like a wannabe GTA copy, but kind of failing.
That was my impression too. That's why I never even touched the Mafia game. But yeah. Oh, so yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about, or do you want to move on?
Uh, there was one game, an indie game, We Happy Few. That's pretty interesting. It gave me BioShock vibes.
Yeah, it's definitely BioShock because it's it always talks about, the setting is always a dystopian society where something has gone far too extreme. It's not ideology that went too extreme, right? And then so Happy Few, it's like everyone has to always be happy. They take drugs and they're always happy. And then your character skips out on taking his drugs and then they try to kill you. And then all the characters are like super, they're all like smiling and trying to stab you to death. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, and one thing I really liked from Microsoft was that they're pushing most of their games, at least, to be on PC as well. So you don't have to own an Xbox One if you have a PC. Like, We Happy Few are coming to the PC. And a lot of other Xbox One games.
Mm-hmm.
Sony has done some stuff like that with the Portal. But nothing else I can think of.
Yeah.
And there was, I can't remember what game it was, but there was, if you bought one for the Xbox One, you also got it for the PC, so you didn't have to buy two copies. Maybe that's for all the Xbox One games, but that's pretty cool.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool. All I heard earlier was that they're going to start doing cross-platform gaming. So that's cool. We might have to wrap this up. It's been like an hour. I think we had a pretty good discussion there. We cover a lot of base in this one.
Yeah, it's 15 minutes of E3 talk.
There's a lot to talk about. E3 has a lot of cool stuff. Yeah. But yeah, if it's cool, if it's okay with you, we're going to move on to the next discussion.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Hey, Andrea, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. We still don't like you, just FYI.
Wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that, Andrea. Let's see. So, Game of Thrones. So, I guess, what do we think of this current season? What are our predictions for tonight's episode, and I guess the finale? And I guess, yeah, any complaints about it, etc. What do you think of the future of this series? Considering it's kind of a strange position it's in, the fact that a show is ahead of the books. So, yeah. Andrea, what do you think? Andrea, go ahead. Yeah. Anyone? Sorry about that.
Yeah, we could start off with the season so far, which has had various weaknesses and strengths, but I just think, especially with the episode we just had, a lot of the storylines kind of became really moot with the way they wrapped it up. Because, Eric, you and I have discussed this before. For example, how Arya is just able to go into the, House of Black and White and say, I'm not feeling this anymore, and it's just okay.
He's like, a girl is truly no one. No, nah, brah, I'm Arya from fucking Winterfell. Oh, okay, he can go now. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, and then the whole point of having the Blackfish escape the Red Wedding, you're supposed to have someone from the family who's still alive and can carry out, some various revenge, and you've completely just killed him off screen, which was a waste, and you had that story essentially go nowhere. And can we talk about what a little bitch Edmure was? Because
that
was the biggest disappointment. You'd think he had kind of toughened up and found some sort of strength after being held by the Freys for so long while his family was killed, and then he just completely, rolls over.
Yeah, there's no redeeming quality of Edmure. There just isn't. I mean, before when we saw him, obviously before the Red Thing, Edmure's like, he's kind of foolish, he has good intentions, but he's stupid, he's, like, sort of vain. He's like, you know, he was all worried about if his wife was bugging or not, that sort of stuff. And to see him all battered and tortured and stuff, or, you know, just starved out, I mean, I thought, like you said, like he'd grow some balls, you know what I'm saying? Like, he would internalize that pain and anger and suffering he received. And that's what I liked about initially the conversation he had with Jaime Lannister when it was starting out, and he was talking to him, looking down on him, saying, like, do you think you're a good person, etc. And then he just kind of just devolved, you know, Jaime being all, I will do anything to see Cersei again because I'm a little bitch. And then I was like, I will fling your child on a cattle pole. I'm just like, what a dumb threat. You realize that's heir to Riverrun, right? And what kind of dumb threat is that? That's still a child of the Frey family. And I just didn't think that, like, wow, Edmure would fucking care more about a baby he's never met, a wife he's never had a relationship with, because he literally got imprisoned after his wedding night, and he would value them over his own blood, over Brendan Tully, you know. It makes no sense. It's so stupid. And like you said, like, what was the point of having the Blackfish, bringing him back after he had escaped? We had seen him for forever. We have not seen him. And they kept building him up, saying, oh, he took back Riverrun, and he has a phrase on the defensive now. You know, it's just stupid. Like, okay, I thought, like, he would have escaped at least with Brienne, even if he didn't have his forces. So, yeah, it just didn't go anywhere. I don't think anyone with a sane mind watched that scene and thought there was any point.
Yeah, well, in the novels, you know, the Blackfish escapes again. He swims away. And it's great because you do get to see that Jaime has become a really clever strategist like his father was. But at the same time, the Blackfish gets away. So it was just a way of bringing some characters together that you haven't had an interaction with. And then the Blackfish kind of goes AWOL again. But you know he's up to some shit. And it makes you feel good. But I will say, really big highlight of that whole scene was the really, you know, perfect interaction with Jaime and Brienne, which, I mean, they had some very well-noted chemistry on screen.
Do you think they're fucking?
Yeah, and I missed Bronn. Oh my god, we were needing some Bronn. Those have been some of my favorite scenes since he's been back this season. And then also the Hound going around and killing people. That was very much missed. I live vicariously through his killing.
Yo, shit that dawn, you know that?
And of course they had to add that little quip about chickens, which everyone appreciated.
What was it? It's just the funniest part about him murdering all those jackasses. One of the last guy he killed after he fucking cashed him with an axe, he's just like, fuck you. And like, is that really all? Those are your last words? Fuck you, really? You can do better than that. And then he's just like, cunt!
And you're bad at dying.
Yeah. You're shit at dying, you know that. Yeah, Tobias, what did you think of this season? And I guess last episode as well.
I think it's been pretty slow. Like, the last few seasons, it's gone on pretty long now. I've forgotten a lot of things that has happened in the previous seasons, but like, one thing I'm pretty tired of is the Daenerys part, because it's just moving back, forward and back and forward and back. I like the Daenerys part, but I like to see something happening more than just going back and forth.
Yeah, no. I mean, Andrea and I always argue about this because she's a huge Dany fangirl, but I'm kind of someone that has had a little bit of enough of her scenes because they feel like they're a filler to me. They don't really go anywhere. I will say this season, that scene when she goes back to Vaes Dothrak and you know, gets the entire Dothraki army now on her side. That was a cool scene. But so much of her scenes are muddled with just the stupid, like, the fact that she's always have to say her stupid long title. Like, I am Daenerys Stormborn, House Targaryen, Breaker of Chains, you know, blah blah blah. I no one gives a fuck at this point. You know, I don't understand why we've had that happen like 3 or 4 times at least in this season, and it's just unnecessary to the point where it's just like people don't even care anymore. And it's funny that she was saying that to the Cal, who obviously does not recognize her title. Why would a Cal recognize her title? And it's just ridiculous to me. And she kept doing it. And then she had her huge hype speech with the dragon. It was cool when you first look at it. And then you realize, wait, why did the dragon just kind of just swoop in kind of out of nowhere? Okay, how convenient of her. You know, how convenient. And then just the scenes in Meereen don't really do much. I liked when Tyrion talked to those slave masters. But once again, I don't think it had a point, because now the slave masters are attacking. And yeah, so I just feel like it made Tyrion's sort of pointless.
Yeah, I think they're going to kill off, what's it called, the leader of the, or the Unsullied? Main guy, yeah, Unsullied. And
Grey Worm?
Yeah, I think they're going to kill off him and the girl, what's her name?
Missandei?
Yeah, because they're building up a relationship between them and Tyrion, and they're just, yeah, it feels like they will be killed off.
That would suck. I really hope.
To rebuttal, because now you've angered me slightly. So I've always said I'm a big fan of Daenerys in the novels, because in the novels, the plot line makes a lot more sense and things actually happen. Whereas in the show, it's just been them making, like, there's been a dick joke every episode between Tyrion and Varys. And I've been mad because they've wasted these two brilliant guys.
Of course.
Where they have the opportunity to establish a really good government and a system, but instead they're just having these awkward social encounters, especially with Tyrion and Missandei and Grey Worm. But this whole part in the novels, you're supposed to have a lot of, you know, diplomat types and political leaders in Meereen that Daenerys is kind of playing a game with and trying to too much step on toes and also listen to her advisors, but also at the same time show them that she's not going to budge from certain positions. And you do get the sense in the novels, this is where she's proving herself to readers that she actually is good at governing. But I don't see them using it to the same effect in the show. And
yeah,
actually,
point.
I thought the whole dragon swooping in scene was fucking awesome.
Of course you did. Yeah.
Well, no, because they've been trying to show us that there is a connection she has, much like the Starks and their direwolves. Because if you remember, when Drogon first reappeared after his absence, they're in the fighting pits, and Daenerys had kind of accepted that she was going to die, and she's having this moment of peace, she's closing her eyes, and the dragon's supposed to be able to sense that she's in trouble, so that's why he comes up. And then when she's there with the army, she had decided, you know, this is where I want to make my big show of strength, and Drogon is in sync with her, so he was, you know, coming in at the right time because he was able to tell she needed him.
Two things. Okay, Drogon comes in, she gives her cool hype speech. You realize that only about 20% of people can hear her? Just FYI. And then, on the second of all, if Drogon comes in whenever she's in danger or absolutely needs him, why the hell didn't she have him ring in when she was captured by the Cowls? Yeah, that does crack you.
The show is messing up. I don't think that's the way it'll go down in the novels. But the novels ended off with her being, you can see the Khalasar approaching her, and actually Drogon's next to her, and they can just see these people coming, and she can tell it's one of the calls that betrayed Khal Drogo, and kind of disbanded with a significant portion of the Khalasar. And so what I always thought was that scene was going is that she was going to get Drogon, she literally just burned the guy, and then the way that, you know, Dothraki law works, if she's put on a show of strength over their former leader, they all become hers. So I didn't think there was going to be this long, drawn-out thing where she goes to Vice with Rock and then sets them on fire. That was just, I think they just wanted to show us a new setting and kind of make a new scene. Because this part, they're just making up, because the books didn't get to that part. And I don't know if they went over it with George R. R. Martin on what happens next. He probably just told them a basic outline of how everything ends up, and they're just filling in the details. But that was a bit, I mean, it was a cool scene, but I don't think it was quite necessary to have them travel all the way over there for her to have a show of strength. Although it did show us that she's able to be an impressive ruler and has abilities that aren't just because of her dragons. She got out of that situation all by herself. Whereas in the past, they've been her saving grace. Like when she burned the masters, the dragons were really responsible for a lot of that. So I think they're just trying to show you she's impressive without.
Mm-hmm. I just really wish they weren't wasting Tyrion. You know, like you said, his scenes have been boiled down to like, okay, first of all, that stupid joke scene in the last episode. Like, what was so cringeworthy, honestly? And then I like when him and Varys banter, and they were putting some stuff in motion, like Varys finding out the source of the Sons of the Harpy, and then Tyrion acting on it by negotiating and then compromising. And I like that moment. It's showing people that you can't always just be completely right all times. You know, yes, slavery is bad, but when you take out an entire economic institution just overnight, it's going to have some pretty dire consequences afterwards. So Tyrion proposed, let's make that gradual. And I thought that was great. Even though it's showing that you have to compromise something to get what you want. And but I just hate now, it just seemed like it was pointless, because now they come back in full force to attack Meereen. And I was just like, I mean, what does that demonstrate to Daenerys? When she comes back and she basically sees that Tyrion failed. And, you know, it kind of makes him look stupid. You know, I don't like that.
Well, here's the thing. What I think they're trying to show here, a lot of people have been very critical of Daenerys because he doesn't compromise. But I think when it's an issue like slavery that she feels so passionate about, there's a very good reason for that. So I'm sure a lot of book readers, because there's actually quite a few people that are critical of her character, were probably expecting Tyrion to come in and completely show her up politically. But Tyrion's coming at this with the mindset of Westeros, where a lot of different powerful families are keeping themselves in check, and sometimes compromise is just what you do to make everyone happy. But here, you just have Daenerys versus the slave masters, and it's not as subtle an art as he's used to. Here, it's just she has to show that she has more strength than they do, and then just beat them back that way. But I think he's not used to this culture yet, and Grey Worm and Missandei were right there. That wasn't necessarily the way to go with the setting they're in.
Yeah.
But that being said, he and Varys got some stuff done in the absence. They're getting the priestesses on her side, which, as we know, they can be very convincing people. And Varys found out, who the harpies were getting information from. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff she wasn't as good at getting into the, you know, grits of, but they were able to help with that. And I don't think that Varys is little birds. It's a little, you know, side note, but I don't think it's as easy as this maester comes in and gives these children candy and all of a sudden they're his spies. I'm sure Varys still has some sort of hold on them. If it would have been this easy, people would have found out how to control Varys' spies forever ago.
I hope you're right. Kyburn's a fucker.
Yeah.
So. So what are our predictions for tonight?
Well, as far as this battle goes, I'm very excited. It's, I mean, budgetary-wise and looking at all of the extras they've used, this is by far the biggest battle they've ever done, which is exciting to know because, I mean, look at what they've pulled off in the past, which is, you know, like the Battle of the Blackwater. It's one of the best episodes, and they had Hardhome. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, whole episode-long battle at the wall, mm-hmm. which was incredibly well done. And then none of these have even come close in size and expense to what we're about to see tonight. So
really?
I'm really excited.
Huh.
It's going to be huge. And I also think maybe some stuff might be coming to a head over in Meereen. That might get started tonight as well.
All their budget is going into that, obviously, that huge battle scene we're getting tonight. How is the siege of Meereen going to end? Is it going to be as simple as Daenerys' dragon burning the fuck out of him?
You know, what I'm thinking is going to happen, you've got Theon and Yara heading over there, and you also have Euron's fleet, which is being built in absolutely record fucking time, which is just not realistic. But what I'm hoping for is to get a naval battle between the two.
How far away is Valathys from Meereen?
Well, it's actually have the narrow sea, and let's say if you imagine going from King's Landing across, that's more of a straight line. They're on the same kind of axis, I don't know. And then, whatever, yes, latitude. But then you have where the Greyjoys are is just a bit more north. So it's more of a diagonal shot, but it's not, it'd be like a bit further than sailing from King's Landing over.
I am looking at a map right now. Yeah. The only issue being when you have Atlantis, there's a huge island chain. So you either have to navigate cleverly through it or just go completely around it. But they're definitely much closer than they were from the Iron Islands. Wow, holy fuck. They travel the fuck ton. Are you kidding me right now? I'm looking at the where the Iron Islands are, and when Yara and Theon left, they left. Dude, how the hell? I mean, they had the fastest ships, but I didn't know they were fucking supersonic.
Well, yeah, we've shown... The show has no consideration for travel time. I mean, yeah, Peter Baelish is just jumping around every episode to somewhere new. There's just complete disregard for how transport actually works in Westeros, but, you know.
Well, okay, I mean, to be fair, it's not like just because there's a next episode you have to imply that... Well, actually, no, I mean, that'd be weird, because we have to assume when we're showing these different scenes, they're happening at the same time, right?
Somewhat. I mean, even when it came to the novels, things weren't necessarily happening simultaneously just because you're alternating chapters between people. It's some of it's simultaneous, some of it's right after. I mean, you're just kind of having a general... They're generally on the same timeline. But it's weird. I don't think he necessarily even... I mean, in many regards, George R. Martin's a brilliant author, but he has shown that he's not very good with time himself and just knowledge of distance and proportions. I mean, the walls he's made impossible. You could not have a wall like that physically. But, well, again, we don't know what Westerosi physics are like, so we can suspend some disbelief on that.
Also, he clearly does not understand time because it took him, like, what, fucking 4 years to write one book?
Nice.
Fuck you. Fuck you, Arthur Martin. Anyways.
You haven't even read books, but nice.
Tobias, what do you think of predictions-wise for tonight?
I'm excited to see what's going to happen in Meereen. And the thing with Cersei, the king or her son, and the whole trial by combat. I'm excited to see how that's going to go.
They got rid of it. That's so annoying. It's just like, you can't kill the hype, but they killed the hype.
Yeah.
What is hype? They never die.
Like, is she gonna escape the city, or I have no idea. But, what else is happening?
I read that it was different in the books, that Tommen and Cersei were basically on the same boat, but it's different. Yeah, sorry, go on.
I don't know.
All right,
like,
well,
whole the Hound thing is interesting, mm-hmm. but is I don't know, is he far away from everything that's happening? Maybe it's gonna be the next season when he's gonna take some charge.
Probably, yeah, definitely. I would assume so. Who do we think is gonna? Okay, how do we think that this battle will end? Who will win and who's gonna die? The Battle of the Bastards.
Oh.
Well, there's no way. Well, I know they don't have the forces currently. I do think with Sansa riding to Littlefinger, he's going to show because he wants to be on the good side. And he's going to want to be recognized when she gets to power. Now, she hasn't made him any promises, and I think that's on purpose. We don't know what the extent of the letter is, but she's gotten, I think, definitely more clever about politics as the direction they're going in. I see her as being instated as the next ruler of Winterfell. Jon Snow will probably head back to the Wall, not necessarily as commander, but to prepare for battling the others. Because he understands that that's kind of priority number one right now, even if the rest of Westeros currently doesn't. But, and that's really what I think is we're going to be headed towards. Daenerys is going to come in with her dragons and is going to help with the battle. I don't know where this is going to leave their relationship. I'm very curious to see how Daenerys and Jon get along. I don't know when they'll reveal that they're family or when they find that out or how they take it. Because if if the theories are correct and Rhaegar and Leon are Jon's parents, and if they got married in secret, which is very possible, then he is, by definition, the next ruler. And I do think I see her character as honoring that. I don't
my
think
question,
Daenerys... Yeah.
All right, my question being... All right, say that Jon Snow is, in fact, a child of Rhaegar and Leon. Doesn't that still make him a bastard?
Well, that's the thing. If they got married in secret, no, because there
oh,
is a...
Oh, married in secret.
Yeah, there's a precedent of Targaryens taking multiple wives, and all the children are considered legitimate in that situation.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think there'd be made such a big deal about his upbringing unless that was where they were going, that he does have some claim and some legitimacy. Yeah, I think this whole thing with Daenerys and King's Landing has been kind of a red herring for herself and for readers. I don't think this is what she's going to end up wanting to do. She will probably instate herself in the Free Cities and take charge of that. And she'll realize she doesn't necessarily have any ties or desire to rule Westeros because she hasn't even ever lived there. Her family used to, but that has no place for her. It's not home.
I don't get that she has such a huge desire to rule a land she has never, ever set foot in or any real relation to. I don't really get that. Yeah.
Well, that's what I think she'll realize. She wants it now, but once she gets over there, well, for one, she'll see the people have essentially forgotten the Targaryens. She has been promised all her life by various advisors wrongly that the people will cheer if a Targaryen comes back. People have been wanting a Targaryen ruler for so long. But when she realizes that's not the case and they're perfectly happy without her, and she meets Jon Snow and sees he has the legitimacy and he actually knows the land, she will have no problem ceding it to him.
Have you both read the books?
I have.
I have not.
Okay. I would like to read them just to see what kind of changes they've done. Are there any really, annoying stuff that they changed?
Plenty.
Well, yeah. So, Dorne they ruined entirely in the show. That's been one of the biggest, I think, disgraces to me, because Dorne is really fascinating in the books. And you have these sisters who are all, actually very different. I like the show where they're just pretty much interchangeable women with different weapons. They're actually very different personalities. And the whole really cool aspect of having Myrcella show up in Dorne is in Dorne, succession laws work differently, and it goes by age and gender irrelevant. So by Dornish laws, Myrcella is the actual next heir to King's Landing. It's not Tommen. So there's this whole kind of subplot of one of the sisters is really for that, and she wants to put Myrcella in charge in King's Landing, and they're kind of trying to make that subversively happen. And that's the other thing. The really cool thing about Dorne, and that's why it was really awesome the way they brought in the Viper when they did, he talks about how his region is so far advanced socially as opposed to Westeros, because he's like, we don't do the kind of stuff to little girls you guys do here. And then they completely ruined that by having the Sand Snakes poison her. I mean, they're angry women, and they want revenge. And they do clash with Doran Martell on how to make it happen, but they're not child murderers. They understand that Myrcella is not responsible for what her family has done. And that's why Dorne was so cool, is because that was the perfect place to send her. It was a place where she'd be safe. And they were also, wondering how to get her in power. Dorne. Now in the show for a while, because it completely ruined that storyline a bit.
Okay.
sorry about that. Yeah. In terms of what I'm trying to think. I mean, I think for sure tonight someone's going to die, like someone important. I think for sure Tormund might die.
Don't say that.
1-1 might die. And I think John gets... What's going to happen is John's pathetic army will get their asses kind of pushed back. And then on the third day, you look to the east and you see fucking Knights of the Vale come in with the sun to their backs. And they just come charging in. And it's like the fucking Knights of Rohan from Lord of the Rings. And then,
they should actually use that music, too. We should just be completely unabashed about ripping that off.
like we can't beat them or we're pushed back. Ride out with me. What? Ride out. That'd be great.
And I hope they've been kind of not showing the direwolves as much, because we're going to get some awesome ghost killing people scenes, because I've been missing that. I want to see... I mean, the direwolves do a lot of damage in the books. They've got the most kills, and I'm very excited. Well, in the show, they've actually... There's this whole website dedicated to who has died. They have all these statistics, so I don't know who spent this time putting it together, but they have who has died, how they've died, and they even rank characters in terms of who's got the most kills. And I think Ghost and Tormund are currently tied for number one.
Ghost is with the one hard as fuck direwolf. I mean, by all accounts, he should be dead, but he's not. He's gone beyond the wall. He's fucked up a lot of people, fucked up wildlings. Just don't give a fuck. I just hate how they're just dropping like flies. I hate that.
Well, this is why the death of Summer was so, I mean, angering to me, because Summer, after Ghost, I mean, that's the strongest direwolf Stark connection there is. Because think of all the times Bran's been inside Summer's head. I mean, that's honestly his biggest ally. And then they just kill off Summer in the worst way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's depressing shit. But it also looks symbolic. Summer has passed. Winter is here.
Yeah, and I could see that happening also in the novels, but I'm sure, I don't know. I hope it's a different scenario, because that was also just diving into a sea of whites, and then...
Yeah, it was dumb. It's like, fight me, bro. I'll just, you know, I'll, even though I'll be killed for sure, let me just jump in that pile right there, yeah. Okay, if we don't get a fucking Tower of Joy, like, conclusion scene in the last episode, I'd be fucking pissed. Like, what a huge cock tease to have, like, oh, we hear Lyanna crying in the tower, or crying out in pain, and we had this cool fight scene, but we're not going to show you, you know, what that promise was.
I think tonight will be Jon's episode, and this would be a good time to reveal it. You know, episode 9 is always the big reveals or the big scene, so it'll probably be after the battle. He'll figure it out. Or, well, not him, but Bran. We'll show Bran, because he's been actually AWOL for at least an episode now. So we're, and I like that they've, in that regard, they've gone back to earlier season Game of Thrones style, where they wouldn't have every storyline in there, but they would just focus on a few per episode and almost alternate sometimes. They could really flesh them out. I've seen them doing this again, where they'll kind of skip an area for a little while.
Mm.
And, you know, actually, Reddit made a cool point today about how we might be seeing the flayed man hanging over Winterfell for the last time in the intros. And we might actually see, you know, the direwolf back, which could be cool.
Yeah, hopefully. Fucking sick of the Boltons. Fucking die already. God.
And I'm hoping we see Ghost kill some hounds.
That'd be cool.
Because, you know, the hounds are going to come to the battle and Ramsay's going to sick them on people, but Ghost will probably just make mincemeat out of them.
Yeah. As it stands, the previews, they're fucked because the Boltons have numbers and better equipment. They're forming actual shield walls. And just like, you might have a giant, but you don't got the numbers, man.
True, but I think we're getting reinforcements.
How much do the Knights of the Vale number?
Yeah, I don't remember, especially show-wise, how many they command. I do think, I mean, it was supposed to be kind of a comic moment when they approached Lyanna Mormont, but I think, from what I remember in the books, yeah, the Mormonts aren't inconsiderable. Having, you know, just, what was it, 62 fighting men? It's not really that low, because they are very much like a Spartan society when I remember reading about them. And she is right. One of their fighters is worth a few normal men because of the way they train. And they're women as well. Maybe they left that out on purpose. How many women are joining? Because they're also very able-bodied.
I mean, if Jorah Mormont is any indication, the guy's a fucking badass. Jorah has survived so many encounters. He's gone through some pretty tough battles. Yeah.
Exactly, well, and Commander Mormont. I mean, that's one of the toughest bastards we had on the show. Mm-hmm. He was...
Well, really... You know who's tougher to him? Carl fucking Tanner. Oh, Jyn Ally. I'm drinking out the skull of fucking jaw of Mormont.
Yeah, that was such a good villain. I mean, his acting was so great for that.
I love him.
Don't get completely, you know, wasted able fighters anymore. It's gotten really old. I mean, the Barristan, again, still alive, still kicking in the novels. He was left on a really cool cliffhanger before a big fight, and I was so excited because I've been wanting to see the Barristan fight for so long. And, yeah, you know, in the show, unceremoniously killed by some twats in masks. And then you have Blackfish going out. And that's the other thing. The show underhyped him because he is actually one of the best fighters in Westeros. And in the show, you know, I know he was also kind of joking, but he was like, oh, I'm probably going to make a fool out of myself. And it's like, not really. You're the Blackfish. You probably took down a lot of men when you died, but I don't know.
Not that we would know. Not would we?
We would not.
All we got was Lannister guard comes up to Jaime. The Blackfish, he died fighting. Oh, okay. And you can even tell Jaime's face, like, oh, that was kind of anticlimactic.
I think what Jaime was supposed to be, like, a moment of kind of regret. Or... Because he, as much as he disagrees... I mean, he's representing the Lannister family. He's loyal to his house. But at the same time, he knows that that was a good man. And he admired him for his, you know, tenacity and for the fact that he upheld his morals. I mean, I hope the show, they could have pulled another, he escaped and disappeared, but they've been doing this too much. Then this whole, I mean, they'd be overdoing the whole, if they didn't die on screen, maybe they got away. It's like, how many times can the showwriters keep pulling that?
Yeah.
Although, I was very happy they did it with the Hound. I mean, that was well done.
Andrea, I have a question to ask you, though. By what right does the wolf judge the lion?
That's the thing. We haven't had these amazing dialogue scenes like we used to. I mean, that was, what, season four?
That's season three.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't had exchanges like that anymore. The dialogue's really kind of dipped down, I think.
Yeah. Well, any thoughts, you two?
No, I don't have anything, I don't think.
Okay. You, Andrea?
About what exactly?
Anything, really. I mean, I don't know.
Not really.
Okay. Yeah, I think we covered a lot of ground today. A lot of stuff about E3, a lot of stuff about Game of Thrones. I'll try to make it. I should be okay for next week. Up to you guys. We'll see what happens. Yeah, and that concludes this week's podcast. I'm Eric. You can find me at dankkushlord.wordpress.com. My Batman v Superman review, full review, is up there. It's like 8 pages long. It's quite lengthy. It took me forever to post that because I just got lazy, I guess. But it's up. And I've been joined by Andrea, and you can find her at...
So I write the weekly review for Game of Thrones. Last episode one's coming up today, right before the episode. And I'm on Instagram at Gypsy Furiosa.
And I've been joined by Tobias, and you can find his articles at The Noobist. And I believe, Tobias, you have a Captain America Civil War review coming out?
Yeah, I've been having some trouble writing on it, but it should be coming out pretty soon.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, be sure to check us out on iTunes and check us out on Noobist. And you can contact your email at podcast@noobist.com if you have any questions or comments. This has been Noobist, and we'll see you next week. And we're good.
All right.
Cool.
Awesome. So, yeah, Tobias, how did you feel about that one?
It felt better than the last one.